Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
the ecological cost of artificial light. This is a reading from the Australasian Science magazine, I suppose, a journal from July, August. It's a six-time-a-year bi-monthly publication of 2019, and this article is by Cara. The author is Cara Xavier. Now, what I was wanting to quickly say is hello to a science teacher friend of mine named Alan, and we have lots of Alan jokes about him. And this one's just for you because it's beautiful. So I hope you appreciate it, and you might listen to it. And of course, I'm doing podcasting to get my stamina up, reading up, cognitive stuff, skills up, as I rehabilitate. Okay, public lighting must be reimagined so it's both functional and safe, has less impact on ecological systems, and allows the visibility of stars again. In 2016, it was estimated that around 80% of humanity and 23% of the landmass is affected by artificial light at night, ALAN, ALAN. While light pollution is generally not considered as serious as other anthropogenic pollutants, the environmental impacts of ALAN are just as important as air, water, soil contamination. Comprehensive standards according ordinances for lighting are crucial because ALAN has a negative impact on most living organisms, whose biological rhythms and processes are fundamentally linked to the presence, intensity, and spectrum of natural light. Quote, life has evolved on Earth with light days and dark nights, but now that's changed. There's concern about the consequences, says Dr. Chris Kaiber of the German Research Center for Geosciences in an interview. The increasing use of energy-efficient, high-intensity white LED lights technology has, in the past decade, is significantly compounding matters. One reason white light LEDs are problematic is that they emit broad range light. The broader the spectrum of artificial light, the broader the group of organisms that is affected by it. Quote, because light is never neutral, it impacts organisms in different ways, explains Dr. Sybil Schroer of the Leibniz Institute for Freshwater Ecology and Inland Fisheries. There's a URL there for it. Quote, with a very broad spectrum, you'll hit a lot of them. Okay, well, scientifically, I'm just a bit dubious about this. It's sort of like a coffee table argument. In addition, I suppose the people listening to it, like me, I just offer comments halfway through. I'm completely unethical. I just read through things and say, oh, no, I disagree with that. I don't think that's true. Okay, in addition to the numerous adverse biological effects, altered behavioural patterns, such as foraging, courtship, mating, navigation and migration, as well as predator-prey and plant-pollinator relationships, can vastly alter biodiversity, ecosystems, crop yields and food production. Change, weaken or break just one thread of the web of life, and the repercussions are dire. Dr. Andre Shikardia of Phillip Island Nature Parks is familiar with how ALAN ecotourism, with how ALAN, this is not me being mad, this is the actual article. I'll just read it verbatim. Dr. Andre Shikardia of the Phillip Island Parks is familiar with how ALAN from ecotourism activities impacts prey predator relationships. Okay, that makes sense a bit more. In Australia, New Zealand, each year hundreds of thousands of visitors view little penguins at night in their natural colonies, but this activity requires artificial lightings. Thanks to Shada's research, Conservation areas are now using dim lights with a spectrum that has least impact on penguins, while reducing light-producing pollution and improving traffic management to mitigate light-induced mortality of shear waters. Quote, "It's vital to preserve the integrity of the natural skylight to keep precious island arcs like Phillip Island, home to the world's largest colonies of little penguins and short-tailed shearwaters, in the dark." He told riding the Light Wave of Technology conference in Sighting Springs Observatory last September. Marine turtle ecologist Dr. Karen Arthur of the University of Hawaii at Manoa supports this approach. Quote, "Artificial light at night can impact wildlife array a wide array of migratory species," she said at the Sighting Springs conference. Quote, "As early as 1911, it was known that alum disturbed marine turtles, disrupting critical behaviours, including adult nesting and hatchling orientation, sea fishing and dispersals. Seabirds can also be disoriented, and fledglings can be grounded where they're vulnerable to multiple threats, or they might starve to death. For these reasons and more, it's crucial we consider sensitive environmental receivers and that the impacts of the light are abated. While LED technology has allowed us to use light cheaply and apply it profusely, such energy-efficient lighting happens to be brighter, more light-producing and harmful than the light it is generally replaces, causing a host of dilemmas. Quote, "Essentially, what we're doing with light is similar to deforestation," says Dr. Teresa Jones of the University of Melbourne in an interview. "We're creating an artificial environment with barriers that fragment habitats animals have to negotiate. These fragmenting barriers are more detrimental when they consist of ecologically disruptive high-intensity blue-rich light, the kind that emitted from energy-efficient white LEDs, LEDs. Living organisms have nothing in their genetic makeup to cope with the degree of exposure to this type of challenge. Alum is also disrupting insects. A 2017 study in PLOS 1, and they've got a link to it, linked light pollution to 75% decrease in flying insects over the past 30 years. Okay, it's a link, not a causal thing. This harming loss not only reduces biodiversity, the production of food depends upon healthy insect communities of pollination, natural pest control, nutrient cycling, and fecundity of soil. This means far more care needs to be taken with aquatic areas because artificial lighting near waterways draws insects up from the water's surface towards the lighting source, which disrupts food chains and weakens the ecosystem. In the documentary Brilliant Darkness, Hotaru at Night, retired University of Florida etymology professor James Lloyd equates the disappearance, turning the page, oh God, fireflies to a canary in the coal mine because these insects are bio-indicators of the health of the environment. Researchers that investigated various intensity of wavelengths for LED lighting on firefly courtship activity argued that, quote, "Spectral emissions, the directionality of the light sources, street lighting, luminaries versus luminaries for paths, and the distinction between point sources and larger sources of diffuse light being given greater consideration when installing artificial light around firefly habitats. This advice is also applicable to other species." What? I don't know why. Okay, it is applicable, but I don't know whether it's valid. "Wild plants are also adversely affected by alum too. Trees exposed to light pollution buds out of seasons, which then impacts insects that depend on the timing of bud bursts for their survival. Early budding can also leave trees susceptible to cold weather damage. This could leave crops and fruit orchards vulnerable as well." quote, lighting technology has been developed for optimum use of mankind, end quote, lighting designer Dr. Tim Shotbolt said at Siding Springs, quote, however, Biota perceives and uses light and also responds to the absence of visible light, sometimes quite differently to humans. We understand this in a limited and vague manner due to the lack of detailed, reproducible, scientifically verifiable research. Furthermore, the potential impact of artificial light on the greatest life mass on Earth, prokaryotes, okay, which is just is even less understood. Prokaryotes. I think these are the bacteria. I have to re-go through that one. It's amazing that 10% of the oxygen we breathe comes from just a single, I suppose, algae, single cell organisms. Okay, we are constrained by the current lighting metrics. Quote, commercial lighting models are based on photometry for humans and do not account for the light visible to wildlife, said Dr. Kelly Pinduli of the Pinduli Environmental Proprietary Limited at Siding Springs. Although, I suppose that she was there, right? Not a company necessarily. I wonder how big that is as a company. Although LED lighting is being developed with less blue wavelengths in response to concerns for endangered species, there's no such thing, for instance, as a turtle-friendly lighting. The Commonwealth Department of Environment and Energy, in association with the Pinduli Environmental, is forming a light pollution guidelines for marine turtles, seabirds, and migratory shorebirds, but far more action is needed globally. That's an end quote of her. Her company's up there. Light pollution doesn't have to be blatantly obvious. According to the 2018 news feature in Nature, and there's a link to it, sky glow can be so faint that humans can't see it, but researchers say exhaustion in 30% of vertebrates and 60% of invertebrates that are nocturnal and are exquisitely sensitive to light. Okay. Barry Clark, Director of Outdoor Lighting Improvement for the Astronomical Society of Victoria, told Siding Springs Conference that illumination must be benign as possible, especially in urban environments. The human health and ecology cases for using minimal light at night are the blue poor are so strong. All outdoor luminaries, outdoor advertising, etc., should be limited to about 220K or less. So that's degrees Kelvin. So it's sort of a pretty red light, he says. I sort of agree that if your screens have to dim at night, I think everything should be dimmed at night. TV screens, the whole lot, cinemas, a lot. Jones says, that's my personal opinion, why not? Jones says, it's vital we make a place for nocturnal realm. Our urban spaces need more dark refuge. Constant lighting is unnecessary and wasteful. I would certainly agree with that. We could be using sentient illumination that responds to foot traffic and turns off when it's not needed. It's critical we take immediate action to minimise lighting at night. I think that would actually be really, really sensible, myself. Yeah, we've got to really think. If you look at it, sitting at night, it's a huge amount of, what are we doing? You know, if you're from another civilization, from a time past, you go, what is all that about? Why is, I don't understand why there's street lighting, myself personally. Adam Carey, Director of Standards and Advocacy for Illuminating Engineering Society of Australia and New Zealand. Wow. Believes public lighting can be reimagined so it's both functional and safe and has less impact on the environment and can allow visibility of the stars again. Quote, involves a radical rethink on how cities plan their public lighting infrastructure and addresses the creep of lighting, he said at Siding Springs. It's a real anti-lighting dude here. While some of the urban spacings are benefiting from breast breakfasts, we're falling down in a big way with street lighting. Although the world, throughout the world, there are failed LED retrofits due to the inherent drawbacks of the technology, the lack of awareness on how to mitigate them, poor LED design, improper installation, outmoded standards that fail to address the counter these problems, plus the use of insufficient lighting metrics that cannot accurately measure the parameters and needed to provide proper guidance for the application of LED lighting. This is amazing. So you just can't bung do what I do at home is bung out something and implant an LED globe, and then I burn some coal to make it up. Amateur astronomer Peter Allison notes that in a two-year LED street lighting trial in Brisbane near the National Lighting Standards yet resulted in unfavourable amenity outcomes for city residents and their neighbourhoods. Quote, designed to comply with luminance requirements should be just one small objective, he said, at the sighting springs. And there is much more involved than luminaire selection, installation and trial procedures. Although urban residents in the urban environment need to feel safe, comfortable and secure at night, bright light is not the answer. While it may provide the illusion of safety, such lighting actually impairs visibility, compromises safety, because strong cast reduces the ability to detect threats and hazards in the shadows. You don't have to tell an ex-military person that. Hinders navigation, prevents dark adaptation, so it takes time to adjust to different lighting levels, and also reduces visual comfort. So in infantry, there's just you'd be shot if you had a flashlight. Well, you hit quite literally by your own side and the other side. The flashlight would just sort of shoot me. Okay, quote, there is no linear correlation between lighting and crime. Explained Mark Chapman. Well, it couldn't be you get zero crime for zero maximum light. Yeah, it's amazing. Okay. Quote, it's a contentious issue, but we need to understand there are many factors involved. Moreover, there's compelling evidence that reduced or zero street lighting at night does not lead to increases in crime or road accidents. The use of appropriate lamps at night in fully shielded or fully cut off outdoors luminaires should be reduced. Ill health, reduced artificial sky glow and greenhouse gas emissions, and even reduced crime slightly. Okay, amazing. I agree with it. I think when you're playing a sport, you need good lighting on a field, I would say. Clark agrees, correct. Crime is a social problem, not a lighting problem. What's more, some experiments with controlled conditions and careful counterbalancings have shown a positive effect of lighting in reducing road accidents at night. But subsequent investigations have indicated that most of the research has been funded by the lighting industry. Oh dear. In practices, it seems that any safety advantage initially conferred by lighting or extra lighting is soon lost because the drivers tend to drive faster. Quote, Clark says that existing Australian standards for outdoor lighting and their draft revisions are failing to provide safe, appropriate illumination. Quote, there may be a case for minimal blue poor lighting to be provided for wayfinding in avoidance of pedestrian obstacles. Besides this, extensive trials have shown overwhelmingly that dimming, reducing the number of streetlights, or completely switching off all streetlights after curfew does not lead to more crime or traffic accidents. I would actually say, fair dinkum, why can't we have a curfew after, say, 2 o'clock in the morning? Why don't we turn the lights off at 2 in the morning? You know, pubs close. My thoughts. Improving our awareness. So I walk at night doing podcasts. I barely see a soul. I might see one or two people walking. Maximum. And, this is in a fairly large area, going for kilometres. Improving our awareness of what constitutes quality light and knowing how to light responsibly can make all the difference in the illumination of urban spaces. Ideally, lighting should be aesthetically appealing, warm and welcoming, soft, indirect, evenly dispersed, thoughtfully prepositioned, pleasant to be around, and to have minimal blue wavelength content. Like that. It's all romance, all sort of amber. Unfortunately, we're seeing the exact opposite, with the dramatic rise of huge media facades, as well as bright, colourful, dynamic, synchronised light in, of landmarks, buildings and bridges, with little thoughts given to its impact. So if you've got vivid, yeah, for instance, in my mind, these people would hate vivid with aplomb. When we take so vivid, just for the internationals, about 100 poor old sods listening to this in Ukraine and Germany and USA and a few in Britain. So vivid is a time when we get data projectors and just go mad in Sydney and just put data projectors on every building and just sort of play around with the spaces there. So it's a lighting festival. And you've got to understand that the fire and lamp, we've associated fire with safety for a long time with big predators. You'd have a campfire and that would keep the dogs, you know, light, artificial light was basically a bubble shield. So I think there's that in our head. Unfortunately, we're seeing the exact opposite with a dramatic rise in large media facades, as well as bright, colourful, dynamic, synchronised lighting of landmarks, buildings, bridges, with little thought given to its impact. When we take account of the biological, ecological environment costs of this practice, lighting for entertainment and visual appeal becomes untenable. Quote, Alan needs to be formally recognised as a pollutant and regulated under the State and Commonwealth Environmental Regulations, Pendoli argues, quote, engineering standards and legislations need to recognise the upper limits on alum. Standard methods and units for measuring alum are required. Because of environmental impacts and management of alum on wildlife cannot be regulated by a one-size-fits-all standard approach. The ecological impacts of alum should be risk-assessed and managed on a case-by-case basis. That sounds very plausible and very anti-Alan. Sorry, Alan. Put simply, our use of light must be optimised while minimising its impact. Herein lies the opportunity to apply a framework that goes beyond reducing the negative effects of lighting to actually promoting the value of darkness and the benefits of the lack of light. This gives me the Star Wars feeling, the dark force. We need better understand why we should protect and preserve darkness in urban spaces. Designers and urban planners and policy makers can be better informed to make value-sensitive decisions about nighttime lighting in cities and towns. Improved appreciation for darkness will help establish desirable lighting infrastructure that can guide how modern nightscapes are lit. New possibilities exist if we design for darkness rather than just to reduce light produce and pollution. That's a good point, I'd say. It's clear that key research questions must be answered and knowledge gaps be filled. Different disciplines also need to be considered so that the research into the impacts of alum is coordinated in the insights developed to better understand the challenges and complexities involved. It's also imperative that firmer links are made between research, policy and practice. This sounds sort of like almost Monty Python thing. The executive, the communist things are saying. Okay, responsible lighting involves using the right kind of light and the right amount of light in the right way at the right time. I could do a whole lot of rights. Underlying all this knowledge, that lighting at night is to look like day has harmful consequences, is more approach is best. Cara Xavier is General Secretary of the Light and Lightning Research Consortium. the New Zealand Ambassador for Women in Lighting, and the International Dark Sky Association Delegate and co-leader of the Dunedin Dark Skies Group. So I suppose Dunedin's a thing in New Zealand. Okay, well, that was a thoroughly enjoyable read. And so, Alan, your time is up. You're going to be regulated. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll post this off to you soon.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.